Good morning, everybody. We're in the three-week period, a time of reflection. I saw a very interesting that a man said, I was listening to bits of a shir by Rabbi Zacharia Wallerstein Zatzal, and he says, people say, yeah, Tisha B'Av's coming, but Emet Hashem, Moshiach will be there first, and we won't have Tisha B'Av. He says, it's a good thing to say, but he turns to people and he says, but did you do anything to get Moshiach to come? He says, it's nice to say, next year we're not going to have Tisha B'Av, but are you a different person than you were last year, than you are this year? And I must say, got me thinking, you know, we all want Moshiach to come, but are we doing anything to get him? Just a thought, and maybe next week we'll take up some time and talk about the halachic ramifications of the fact that we have Tisha B'Av on a Sunday. What the din is for the previous Shabbos and what the din is for Sunday, so that will be for next week, and then we'll take a break for Benes Manim, start again in Shrodish Hedl. For this week, we're discussing some interesting halachas that have to do with preparing food. As we know, there's lots of halachas and Shabbos, special is a whole section on itself, but here there's a couple of smaller malachas that we'll see. Hopefully we'll get through some of them soon. So we'll start with the malacha of ma'abed. Ma'abed is when one processes the leather in order to make it ready for use. And they use salt, some acid, and they soak the leathers and made it softer, and then the leather was able to be used. Now, generally speaking, we say ein ma'abed ba'oichlin, we say ein tzviya ba'oichlin, ksiva ba'oichlin, a lot of things that when it comes to food, we say the halachas don't apply. But we will have exceptions when they are done for that purpose and that purpose only, and then it's a question of who be a derabbanan of a ksera. So when it comes to pickling food or something like that, so then we'll say that there's an issue of ma'abed, but we'll see the gedari. So we'll start off like this. Let's divide food into two categories. First of all, there are those foods that are usually pickled, and a very good example that would be a cucumber. As you know, pickled cucumbers is a big industry. So those things that are usually preserved or pickled or something like that, with salt or vinegar, those are those type of foods. And then you have the other type of foods that are not usually pickled, but you can still salt them for taste, but you don't pickle them. And we're going to have different halachas for the two groups. So let's deal with the first group, those foods which are often treated with salt or vinegar to pickle them, to make them last longer. So the example I saw given are onions, radishes, pickles, pickled cucumbers. So those would be type of food that people would salt or pickle for long-term usage. And therefore on Shabbos, you have to be careful not to do that on Shabbos. And the only way to eat these foods salted would be either or. We have two cases that we're going to give a heter. Number one is that you dip the food into the salt and then eat it immediately. And you do it one by one. So if you have a plate full of cucumbers, you take each piece, dip it in salt, and then eat it. You cannot sprinkle the salt over the whole plateful, because that's considered as derech melicha, the way that salting is done. And in a food that could be done for long-term usage, we don't allow it for short-term. Or the other way is to dilute it. So if your pickles are, you're going to make a salad dressing, so then when you sprinkle the salt on the pickles, it's no problem that you immediately add the rest of the dressing. You add some oil or some vinegar or something like that, and then the salad is dressed, so then it's no problem with sprinkling the salt on the cucumbers. So again, either the food, the vegetable is dipped in salt and not sprinkled on it, and you eat it one by one for immediate use, or you dilute the salt with a liquid, and then it's not considered as melicha. When it comes to foods that are not usually salted and not usually pickled, but you often add salt for taste, So that doesn't matter. Adding taste is not a problem. Therefore, you can salt them as usual. Examples are given are eggs or tomatoes, tomatoes, as some people call them. Although interesting, green tomatoes are very, I personally haven't seen much about it, but I saw written in a read books that people pickle green tomatoes, or something that people pickle. So it makes a difference if they're the regular red ones that we're going to eat, or it's green ones that people use for pickling. So then some you can, these ones you can salt, these ones you can't. When it comes to actual pickling, that means you put your vegetable into a solution and you leave it there for long term. There we say that it's also doimed to mabashal. It is similar to cooking. Even though it is not cooking, nevertheless, it's Gzeir Rabbanan, we don't do pickling on Shabbos. There is one exception, and there's a discussion why it's mutter, even then it's only the Achronim that bring it, is if you have a pickled fish and you want to put some vinegar on it, you can put a weak solution of vinegar over the pickled fish in order to give it extra taste when you eat it. In the times of the later Achronim, the typical example of pickled fish was herring. As you know, herring you could buy either salted and in oil or pickled in vinegar. And then before they served it, they might do something to the herring. So one is, if you have pickled herring and you want to put a bit of vinegar on it to give it a better taste, you may do that if it is not a strong solution and it is for immediate use. And when it comes to the other way around, you've got a salted herring or salted fish, and you want to now put water on it to remove the excess salt so it becomes more palatable. So that may also be done, but again, can only be done for immediate use. It's very interesting. In the discussion of Bishul, we talk about when you put something in water and you apply heat, and through the cooking process, the food becomes edible. So what would be if you have a salted fish that is not edible, you put it into water, it dilutes the salt, and now the fish becomes edible. So have you done cooking? So everybody agrees you haven't done cooking because you haven't applied heat, but you've done with cold water. But what happens if you did warm water? All the rest is discussed. Interesting, the Prima Godim, who lived in the 1700s, he writes that it's Makabah Patish. What's Makabah Patish, as we've said before, is something which was incomplete. You do one action to this item, and now it becomes complete. So that's considered as the last smiting of the hammer to make to complete an item. And that is a malach of Makabah Patish. You have a garment that still has threads hanging off the side. You go and you cut those threads off, even though the garment was wearable. But this is the final action that you do in order to make it complete. That is considered Makabah Patish. So if you have a piece of fish that was not edible, now you put it into water and becomes edible. So it's not Bishul, maybe it should be Makabah Patish. The Maaseh of the Prima Godim remains Das Yochid, is the individual that holds this, and the Mishaburah says that we do not bask in it, that is not an issue. And therefore, with Hamad Lamaskona, that you can take salted fish and you can rinse it off, you can rinse it or soak it in water and make it edible, and there's no problem, but this can only be done if it's to be eaten on Shabbos. And also, it's got to be cold water. It must be warm water, it must be, or I should say hot water, which is above the Yatzeleres Boy, even if it's in a Kli Sheni or Kli Shlishi, one should not do it, but only with cold water. Now, another thing that's also on Shabbos from the Halacha of Melicha is kashering, to salt a piece of meat, or to prepare a piece of meat for salting. The process of kashering meat, Some people still remember how it's done, but most of us didn't grow up that way. You buy kashered meat, and you don't know anything about kashering, but the way kashering was done is the meat has to be washed. You do hadocha, you have to wash off the excess blood from the meat before you salt it. Then it has to be salted on all sides and left to sit lechatchila for an hour, and then afterwards it gets washed again and soaked. And then the meat is ready to be eaten. There's a discussion in halacha, how many times you soak it and how many times you rinse it and you shake it and nipot and all sorts of halachas, but we're not doing yoredeh now. Excuse me, we're not doing yoredeh now, so we're not going to go into that, but we're going to discuss what part of this process is mutter asur on Shabbos. So as I said, it gets washed off before the salting, then it gets salted and gets washed off after the salting. Because I've been to two different abattoirs in this country where they shut chickens, and in both of them, these are sharing almost opposite ends of the Khumra spectrum. Both of them are machmir in all stages that they do. That they after the chickens are salted and they've sat for an hour in the salt, the chickens go up a conveyor belt and then drop onto a grate that they makayim the din of nipot, which you shake off the salt, and then they go through three different tanks of that will soak them, so they go through three different washers. So they makayim all the khumras. See, those type of khumras, even the most basic kasher will put it in, because it's all automatic. So they fall, the chickens, after they fall onto the grate, they fall from there onto another, into a bath. The bath is a big turbine, which then moves the chickens along, pushes them out of the one bath, and then flop into the next one. Another turbine will flop into the next one, and then it comes out, and only then it goes back. So once you have the system built, then there's no problem of that. It's called the sink. So, as I said, that's the process that we do for kasher meat. Now, there's something else, is that meat needs to be kasher within 72 hours of shechita. If meat has not been kasher within 72 hours of shechita, we have a problem that you cannot kasher it in the conventional way anymore, which means that the blood will not come out by pure salting and washing. The only way to get the blood out would be by applying heat, by roasting. The same thing that we are machmir on when it comes to liver. Liver, even if it's within 72 hours, we roast it and we don't cook it. We don't salt it and leave it stand in order to prepare it for kashering and for eating. But we roast it. Now, meat can be kashered, but it has to be roasted if it was not kashered within the first 72 hours of shechita. What can be done to extend the 72 hours is that at some point during the 72 hours, you wash, you do a hadocha, you hose it down, you wash it, and then that extends the shelf life of the meat by another 72 hours, and you can then kasher it within 72 hours of being washed. So what's the nafkamina lahalacha? So let's discuss the lahalacha now. When it comes to Shabbos, we're going to say you cannot salt your meat, and you cannot kasher your meat, you cannot wash the meat. Not only that, lechatchila, I say lechatchila because it's machlokes, we pass in that raw meat is mukta, because raw meat is not considered edible, and therefore considered mukta. The Gemara discusses that there were people who used to suck on raw meat. Gemara's lashon is as chazi le'umta, it is viable to be sucked on, and therefore raw meat is not mukta. But we say since it's not done in our day and age, we treat meat as being mukta so long as it's not cooked or not made edible. Obviously, if it was something like the South Africans have biltong, or people have beef jerky or something like that, which is dried meat processed, and then it's considered edible afterwards, so even though it's not cooked. But again, that's because it went through a process, it's become edible. So it's plain raw meat, halachically, the hachila we consider as mukta. Therefore, you cannot say. And apart from the fact that it's mukta, you're also not there for it. You're also not allowed to salt it, nor wash it off. The problem is that what happens if you have meat that was shechted on, say, a Wednesday morning, and now the 72 hours come up on Shabbos morning, and you want to know, if I don't wash the meat now, or kasher it now, so then I won't be able to kasher it the regular way, I can only roast. So essentially, this is not considered a total loss, because the meat can still be eaten, but it can only be eaten in a certain form. It has to be roasted. It can no longer be cooked. Is this considered a hefsid? We pass it out of it. Is considered a hefsid, especially in big quantities, or if it's in the retail place, like at a butchery. So then it will make a big difference then. So we say this is considered a hefsid, a loss. And because of the loss, we allow a person to, we find a heter to have this meat washed in order to give it a extended shelf life, as I call it. So therefore, if a person is stuck with a piece of meat that is now hitting its 72 hour limit, he wants to wash it beforehand, the number one way to do it is ask a goy to do it, because after all, it's only a seder not to wash the meat. And the mailer, it's a shvus to shvus, telling a goy to do something which is a seder, it's a double shvus, in a situation which would occur a loss, and it would be a butcher, would be a significant loss. So then you can do a mira la'akum, and a goy will then wash it for you. If you don't have a goy, then we do allow a person to do it himself, take a hose pipe and hose the meat down, you can even move the meat, because even though we said the meat is mukhsir, when it comes to makan hefsir, so then we go with the opinions that hold that meat is not mukhsir. That's why I said before, I stressed that it was only the khatkhila that we treat the meat to be mukhsir, but for the evet, we will go with the more lenient opinions. If the meat is in a utensil, so we say that the way to do it, to order to get it less of a problem, is you do what's called a harama. You do what appears to be a trick, is you wash your hands over the meat. You wash and you wash and you wash your hands, and before you know it, the container that the meat is sitting in is full of water, and now it gets washed by the fact that it's sitting in water. You can't leave it that way, so you have to pour the water out afterwards, and even though there could be a problem of mukta, because no one's going to drink this water, but nevertheless, halakhically, we pass that this water is fit for animal consumption, and therefore it's not mukta, and the meat, as we said, in this particular case, we're going to go with the lenient opinions and say that it's not mukta, and therefore you can pour the water out after having done such a thing as well. And that is basically the stories of kashering, which I imagine is not so practical in our day and age where we buy pre-kashered. Just an interesting aside, this halacha of meat having to be kashered within 72 hours, apparently it becomes practical every now and then. I read this Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, as the rabbi in Atlanta when he was there, writes that he was a recognized OU certified rabbi. What does that mean? Is that if a local person needed a problem, needed a rabbi to solve a problem for him, he was the man to contact in Atlanta. And it happened to him that there was a shechita done far out, and they were trucking it to the East Coast, and the trucker got delayed. The instructions were that if he gets delayed, he must contact the local rabbi. So the trucker called Rabbi Feldman and told him that he was delayed on his road, and the meat that he is carrying is reaching its 72-hour deadline, and he was told to contact the rabbi. So Rabbi Feldman got the trucker to drive him to town, and he took him to a local butchery, and they hosed down all the meats and gave the certification that was halachically correctly hosed, that it can be kashered in the regular way when it arrives at the destination. One more thing about salting and pickling is that if you want to weaken a solution of something strong, you may add water. So if you have vinegar and you want to make it weaker, you want to add water, that's no problem. You may do that on Shabbos. Now, another issue to deal with when you deal with food is kosev and moichik. Kosev is writing, and moichik is erased. Lahalacha, when the av malacha of kosev, the av malacha that one is chayav in a Torah for writing, is when a person writes two letters. If a person creates a word by bringing letters to each other, you have existing letters and you now line them up, that is not considered as kosev. So playing a puzzle of some sort is not like bananagrams or Scrabble or something like that. From the point of view of kosev, that's not a problem of kosev of Shabbos, because the fact that the letters were at different geographic locations, even though it might be 5 centimeters apart, and they didn't form a letter. Now you brought them close. So the Gemara says, it was only Kirub Ba'alma that was hostile, was only lacking the fact that you bring it close to each other. The letters were written already. Therefore, to put two letters next to each other, or to separate two letters from each other, is not a problem. It's the creation of a letter or the destruction of a letter. So then you have another discussion. What happens if you have a letter that is made up of bits and pieces, and all the bits and pieces existed, and now it's a question of you putting them in shape. So an example given of that is someone who wrote his name or wrote a word on the spine of a book, on a sefer. I actually saw someone who marked all his machzorim by marking his name on the spine, on the, well, not the part where it was found, but on the closed part where all the pages are. And he wrote his name on it. Now the problem is that when you open up, you have half the name on one side and half the name on the other side. Or if you flip through the pages, you destroy the whole name, and then suddenly, whoops, the book closes, then you've got a whole name. So can you open and close that book of Shabbos? So the big machlokes in the poskim, the chachila, we tell a person not to use such a sefer. If it's the only sefer he has available to learn, it will allow him to use it. But generally speaking, we tell a person to avoid such a thing, because there, it's not that the letters were separated and you create words, but rather the individual letters were broken and you're putting them back together again. You didn't do any biting. Everything was written before, you just brought them together again. So that, as I said, is my focus, and we're going to be machmir. So now, how do we apply this to food? So there's two things in food. First of all, we have to know about cutting words and not cutting words. We have to know what's put in us at that point. But then also, the way the possible see writing is that writing is usually script on a background. And when you have script on a background, so then that is considered as writing. But when you just have script without a background, then that's not considered writing. Now, what I mean by that is that if you have a cake and you take icing and you write on it, everybody agrees that is a problem of ksiva. You take icing and you write, there will be a problem of ksiva. And then if a person were to break up that writing, there will be a problem of bechik. But if you made something in the shape of a letter, that doesn't have a background. That's just a plain letter. So we're going to say that that is not considered writing, nor is it considered as moichik when you destroy it. There's a separate problem of making it surah on Shabbos. Could be a problem of boiling it, and we'll deal with that separately about making it. But now we're discussing the breaking it. So if it's a surah in itself and it's not writing on a background, so then we're going to say that it is considered it's not considered as writing. So let's now then divide it into, again, we're going to have our two different cases. If you have a cake where you have an icing, or you have used colored sugar balls, and you created a shape, a design, or writing, and now, this was all done obviously before Shabbos, and now you have your beautiful cake, and now you want to cut the cake up and serve it out. It's someone's 22nd birthday, and you want to cut up, and everybody wants a different piece, a different edge of the two, that will be problematic of Shabbos, that you are cutting through the icing and destroying it. You cannot do that. However, this will be the rule, is that if it's done through eating, you're actually munching on it, chewing on it, then it will be permitted. So if a person wants the whole two of the 22, that's not a problem. You cut out the whole number and give it to one person, and as he eats it, he doesn't have to stuff the whole thing in his mouth in one shot. He can just chew on it, but as he bites off the pieces, there's no problem of mechika over here, because considered derech achila. There is an opinion of the Chazanish that he's machmir in such a case. I'm bringing it, but I see that the general accepted psak is not to be machmir like the Chazanish, but I'm just mentioning that there is such a thing with the Chazanish that's machmir on even derech achila, that will be awesome. So we're saying that if you have your icing, cutting the icing on Shabbos, if it has writing, you cannot do. But if you cut the whole letter, then if a person eats it during the eating, that's not considered as mechika. If the cake was pre-cut, even if it was pre-cut through the letters, on Friday, or whatever, before Shabbos, someone cut the cake, was pre-cut, I saw something for example, it was just pre-cut at the top all the way through. It's not enough to just make a slice of the icing, but the actual slice was totally cut. So then you can pull the pieces out, even though when you pull the pieces out, you're left with a broken letter, based on the fact that I said that when a person writes on the side of a book, so you, by opening the book, you destroy the writing, by closing the book, you make the writing back together again. Since there are opinions that hold that is not a problem on Shabbos, so I said we machmir, but there are opinions that hold that it's not a problem on Shabbos. Therefore, when it comes to food, which in itself is a chumrah, we'll say a double chumrah you don't have to keep, and therefore if it was pre-cut before Shabbos, then you can take the pieces out on Shabbos. And that is concerning when you have the writing as a separate entity on the cake, like an icing or sugar balls or something like that you have put on top of the cake. So it's two things. You have writing and you have the background, which is the cake. When the writing is part of the food, for example, the most famous example that I can think of is Petit Beurre biscuits, where the name is Petit Beurre, or the name of the company, Ossen, is in the cookie, is in the biscuit, and it makes no difference whether it's ingrained or whether it is sticking out. In some places in the world, when they bake bread in a baking tin, so the baking tin has the name of the bakery in the side of the baking tin, so that when the bread comes out, you can see the name of the bakery in the bread. Doesn't matter whether it sticks in or sticks out. These are all cases of wording or shapes, for that matter, that are inside food. Here we're going to say that since it's in the food itself, then therefore it's not considered as ksiva, it's not considered as a written letter because it doesn't have a background. Therefore, we're going to take it to kula, and you can cut such a thing and eat it. So an afkamina would be, for those who like to keep the vinegar of making a shlisel challah on the Shabbos after Pesach. So what is that? There are many minhagim brought down to how shlisel challah was many versions, how it was done, but it seems like that they put a key into the dough, and you bake the key in the dough, and it was connected the makdeach of panosa. Over time, people have come up with interesting ideas, and instead of putting a key into the challah, they bake the challah in the shape of a key. So if the challah is baked in the shape of a key, so then the challah itself has the shape. There's no problem of them cutting the challah as such. I heard an interesting maisa. Someone told me that someone made a challah where they made a double challah, a regular shaped challah, and then a small T-shaped challah, which they stuck on top of the big challah. So now you're having a key which was placed on top of the challah. So here you have a little bit more problematic, because it's not the challah itself which was the key, but rather it was a key on a background. So it happened to be made of the same dough, but it was created in the form of a tzura on top of something which had a background. So he went to speak to a rav about it, and the rav told him that he should break the top piece off whole and not cut it. And then once it's taken off, so then you can cut it. He said, no, not kill it, give it to the children. But lemaisa, erech achila, if you're not close to the chazanish, then you just eat it without slicing it. It would also solve the problem. You just take it off. That would be another practical opinion. Now, once we're talking about writing, so then this is all, until now we're talking about writing that is either part of the icing or in the actual food. So if the writing is not part of the actual food, but it's on the food, so you have, for example, if you have a sausage, a bologna, a naknik, they call it in the Hebrew, whatever.
Salami?
Salami, that's the word I'm looking for, thank you. So if you have one of those that has it comes in some sort of with an artificial skin, and the skin has writing on it, and the wrapping has the name of the company, and the amount of the ingredients, and the amount of the calories inside, and all the rest, so they have a lot of writing on that, so one should be very careful not to cut through the writing on Shabbos. But as we said, separating letters is not a problem, it's only breaking the letters. So if you cut in between the letters, it doesn't have to be between the words, can be between the letters. Cutting between the letters is permitted. I want you to be careful. Therefore, the recommended way is, if you know you're going to have salami on the Shabbos, is to peel it in advance, the slices in advance, and you don't have this problem on Shabbos. Another example of this is a challah that comes with a ticket, a sticker on it. It comes with a sticker on it telling you which bakery it was from. And now the question is, what do you do with it? So interestingly enough, I saw Rabbi Karp is the one who's maker, or the Shmuel Shabbos is the one who's machmir. Usually it's the other way around. But the question is, can you pull the sticker off before Shabbos? Because if you pull it off before Shabbos, have you destroyed the shleimus of the challah if you want to use it for Lechem Mishnah? Should the chatzilah be made with challahs that are whole, they are sholim? And if there's a little bit missing, then that's not considered sholim. So we say that when you've got two challahs that merge rather than in the oven, they touch, you can pull them apart, and even though you see now a piece that looks that it's lacking crust, that's not considered as being chosid in its shleimus, it's not missing in its wholeness, because that is the way it baked, and it didn't crust over there because it was touching another challah, and even though they stuck, and you pull them apart, we say that's not a problem. So the question is, when you pull off the sticker and a little bit of the crust might come with, have you ruined the shleimus? So Rabbi Karp actually is the one who's more makel, and therefore he says that you may do it on Erev Shabbos, and in fact he recommends you do it on Erev Shabbos, and you don't give two problems of what to do on Shabbos. Whereas Rav Novitz says not to do it on Erev Shabbos, because you're going to end up with your challah not being a sholem anymore, and therefore you should do it on Shabbos. Okay, that's the Gabbai Erev Shabbos. Now what happens if you didn't do it on Erev Shabbos for whatever reason, if you want to be machmir, or that's the way it was, So then, on Shabbos, you can slice your challah, but do not slice through the label so that you don't slice the writing. And if you don't want to eat it, so then you can pull it off. You pull it off, it's a problem of boire. So you take it off with a little bit of challah, which usually is what's going to happen anyway. A little bit of challah is going to come off of the sticker, and then you can pull it off, and that's not a problem. A couple of other examples of things that have writing is if you have an egg, that there is the stamp on the shell. Just be careful not to break the writing over there. Generally, if your eggs are hard boiled, then the usually through the liquid of the boiling, the writing goes off. You don't have to worry about it, but sometimes it can survive through being boiled, or if it would be, say, on Yom Tov, where you want to use a raw egg as an ingredient. Shabbos also, you can use a raw egg for something, but I can't imagine what. But Yom Tov, they say using a raw egg, so you have to be careful when you crack the egg to crack it on the side and doesn't have the writing. You don't break the writing. Another example would be if you have a sticker on the fruits and vegetables, then also you have to be careful not to cut through the writing. Okay, I think I'm going to stop there because the next verses really start to another subsection, which can be a position on its own. We're down to about a minute to go, so we'll hold it there. And the mentorship for next week, as I said, we'll discuss. Halachas that pertain to, maybe we'll finish this off first, and then we'll discuss halachas that pertain to your Tisha about being on a Motzei Shabbos. Wish everybody a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Good day.